Way the lads! Yeah, fantastic! Right, come on, lads, let's go and do this. Let's go to this cocktail bar in London and drink the bar. Let's just go. Yeah, come on, Pa. Pa, it's all right, isn't it? Pa, if I go out and just drink the bar with everybody? What do you mean? What do you mean I can't? This is so unfair! It's so unfair! I hate you! I hate you! I wish you were dead! It's so unfair! What do you mean I should try this? Well, sounds a bit weird to me, but all right, I'll give it a go. St. George! St. George! You are real! Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, there's been a lot of stuff in the media recently about good Prince Hal, about Prince Harry. And I've done a number of videos on it, and today I want to talk about something inspired by David Starkey, really. David Starkey talked about Prince Harry in a kind of metaphorical sense, having had a conversion experience. And he said this explained why Harry had moved from being the sort of not very bright, but sort of fun, jolly chap to being the woke twit that he is now. But I think that should be taken rather literally. What I want to do is I want to explore whether Prince Harry has actually had some kind of woke religious experience, and I think he probably has. Before we do that, a quick word from my sponsor. Well, first, a word from our sponsor. Now, we are all truth seekers here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, but here's the problem, chaps. We can only get to the truth if we have multiple perspectives, if we have multiple interpretations, if we have access to the other side, if we have access to all viewpoints. Only then can we really understand what's going on in the world. And we are increasingly finding that we cannot do that. Information is blocked, websites are blocked, alternative perspectives are blocked. And so the only way around this, realistically, is some form of VPN. And as far as I can see, Atlas VPN gives you everything you can possibly need. There is currently a steel Black Friday deal going on in which you can get Atlas VPN Premium for just $1.70 per month plus 6 months extra with a 30-day money-back guarantee. This is the best VPN offer Atlas have ever done, and it's a time-limited offer, so it's time to get on with it, chap. You know, all kinds of benefits to Atlas VPN. It's as I say, there's this offer of just this brilliant offer. You can unlock your favourite content from all over the world. If you can't access your favourite program or whatever, your Atlas VPN has got you covered. You can keep your Google searches secret and private using Atlas VPN. You can stop ads and malware. You can save money online. It will give you get you the best deals while shopping online, and it will all that kind of stuff. And you can protect unlimited devices using Atlas VPN. As I say, there is a fantastic offer on at the moment in which it's just $1.70 a month plus 6 months extra with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So this really is the cheapest and best way to get a VPN. We increasingly need VPNs. The truth is blocked. The truth is covered up. We can't get access to information. And in a society that's doing this to us, we need a VPN. And as far as I can see, Atlas VPN is where it's at, chaps. Okay, we're back in the room. So, Prince Harry and conversion experience. Let's have a look at this idea. What causes a person to engage in a sudden change of character? You may have known in your life people that have done so. Now, often the answer can be some kind of conversion experience. You can conceive of a conversion experience in the stereotypical way of St. Paul on the road to Damascus, prey into hunter, of a fundamental change whereby you go from being, let's say, the arch persecutor of Christians to being the arch Christian. You create a new self, essentially. You suppress all aspects of the old self. You hate your old self, and thus you spend all of your time trying to purge any evidence of your old self in other people. That is the fundamental idea. Now, according to research by Lewis Rambo and various other scholars of religion, there are a number of kinds of conversion. It doesn't just have to be the dramatic collapse kind of conversion. A conversion can be also more of a process. It can be something more subtle that occurs over time and with gradual kinds of realizations and moments of epiphany that can be seen as sort of very small, very small indicators of conversion. And I think that's more what we're dealing with. Now, the fundamental idea, as I say, with conversion is basically something like this, that It is, or with religious experience, dramatic religious experience, that it is unhealthy to either be too relaxed or to be too on edge, to be too aroused, as it were. So the brain has two mechanisms, hyper-arousal and hyper-quiescence. If you become too high in either one, then the other one hits in. And it hits in at a time, of course, when, because you are in this extreme state, you are highly instinctive, and therefore you are highly likely to over-detect agency, things like this. And therefore you end up seeing the face of God or hearing God's voice or whatever it happens to be. And this is adaptive because it basically stops you from dying, from becoming ill. Now, if we look at the psychology of the kind of people that undergo essentially, you know, conversion experiences or religious experiences, there is a degree to which Harry sort of fits the bill. Let's have a look at what we're dealing with in Prince Harry. First of all, we have a person who we know has dealt with various traumas. You have the minor trauma, the mini trauma, I don't know, basically being told that you're stupid all your life, which damages your self-esteem and makes you feel rubbish and makes you feel you're not worth much. Even in his memoir, Spare, which I have now read, he misses out the fact that he was held back a year when he was at prep school before he went to Eton. He had to repeat a year because he was so much less intelligent than all the other kids. Though he does address the idea that he's the thicko prince and so forth and tries to cope with it. But certainly you have this would be something that would be difficult to deal with and so forth. But then you have obviously the trauma of his mother's death and everything surrounding that. That's the first thing. It has been found that if you go through a trauma, particularly at that kind of age, such as the age of about 12, and particularly something like a parent dying or your parents breaking up or something like that, it can cause a kind of arrested development where basically you become, to a certain extent, psychologically stuck at that stage. You don't move beyond that stage. Now, one of the things that involves, of course, we know that the personality trait neuroticism, that decreases with age as a rule, apart from a blip in the teens. And so what that would mean is that you would be stuck being very high in neuroticism, you would be potentially stuck being relatively low in conscientiousness and stuck being relatively low in agreeableness. With some people that get stuck at that age, an example is paedophiles, they become sexually stuck at that age as well. So they're 12 years old and they continue for the rest of their lives to fancy people who are 12. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we would expect him to be high in neuroticism anyway, because his mother was obviously high in neuroticism. She was bulimic, she had eating disorders, she was anorexic, sick, whatever. These are all expressions of neuroticism, of feeling negative feelings strongly, particularly things like anxiety. Thirdly, he has admitted to in his memoir to being very high in anxiety, to the extent that he argues that he has his beard and he desperately wanted to keep his beard and not have to shave it off for his wedding, as his brother was forced to shave his beard off. He had to shave it, didn't, because apparently it's his equivalent of it's an anxiety thing for him. It's like a comfort blanket. He likes to have his beard. It reduces his anxiety for some reason. So we know we have a person who is, as well as having low IQ, which I've looked at in other videos, obviously is very high in neuroticism. Now, when you look at the nature of religious experience, people that have religious experiences, people that move basically from one sense of identity to another, what you're dealing with is a person that has an unstable sense of identity. That is underpinned by being neurotic. You're neurotic, you're anxious, you start questioning everything, you're anxious about who you are, you don't know who you are, the world is a frightening place, it doesn't make sense, you're constantly questioning everything, and you're even questioning who you are. And so your sense of self is unstable. You deal with that by creating a false, strong sense of self, which allows you to say, yes, I'm this, I'm fixed in space, but you don't feel it. You don't really feel fixed. You feel a swirling sense of chaos, and you don't really know what you are and where you fit in. Why? Because a sense of self develops out of a sense of stability, and you lack that, either for environmental reasons, because traumatic things have happened to you, which have told you the world is unstable, there is no stability, anything could happen, you don't know who you are, what day it is, what time it is, or because you're just congenitally neurotic, and so you don't have that sense of stability. Nothing seems to be stable and unchanging that you can rely upon. Everything seems to be something that could change at any moment. You don't trust anything not to change. And so you can't attach to anything properly and say, this is who I am clearly. And I'm not, and I know, I'm certain, I have a sense of meaning and certainty. I know this is who I am. You can't do that. It's unstable. So you create an exaggerated identity to be able to cope with this instability and to tell yourself that it's all stable and everything's going to be okay and to soothe yourself and reassure yourself. And that, we could argue, is what Harry did with this kind of bad boy image. It's very, very similar to the conversion of people like Augustine or whatever. You go from one extreme to the other. So you've got this bad boy, jolly chap, you know, way the lads kind of idea, together with being rather childish, and that's who he is. Now, what you would expect someone like that, you'd expect that to be unstable because it's a reflection, the fact that it's so extreme, and from what we know about him, it's a reflection of neuroticism, and so you would expect at some point it to be unstable and it to collapse indeed into the opposite kind of identity. Because what neuroticism predicts is, one, that you are a period of extreme religious fervour, two, religious change, religious conversion, that you move from one kind of religiosity to another, and three, extrinsic religiousness, i.e. that you will conform to what you see as the new religious in thing, because you're anxious about not conforming and you think, and it will calm you down and make you feel that you're one of the crowd. Now you have all this in Wokeness is a change from what he's been originally inculcated with. Wokeness as well gives you the sense of moral superiority and so forth. And wokeness is, of course, the in thing. It's the new religion. Now, what is the idea of wokeness? It's this cult of the self. It's the self is unique. The self is special. It's all of, life is all about happiness. Life is all about you as an individual, self-development, therapy. That you should think about what your problems are and really go to, not kind of suppress your problems or try and get over them. No, wallow in your problems. Try and find out what they are. You have these notions of hierarchy and so forth, of inverted hierarchy, and the idea that you, as a person of privilege, should do some kind of woke penance for what you have done, and then that makes you better and that makes you morally superior. You have all of these kinds of ideas, and in some ways it's very similar to Christianity, this sense of guilt and all this kind of stuff, and it's a religion that is offered to someone like that. Now, how does he get into this religion? This is something that David Starkey looked at. Well, one of the ways, it's widely known throughout the early church, that you end up with conversions, and there's a lot of research on this on fundamentalist Christian groups as well, is via a girl. Is via what you might call flirty fishing. So a lot of the conversions of men in the early church were via what is called secondary conversion, i.e. they fancy a girl. The girl is a Christian because women are more religious than men. Women are more attracted to that kind of religiosity based around equality and harm avoidance in the early church, I mean, and niceness and signalling your niceness and all this kind of thing. Women are more attracted to that kind of thing because they're higher in the values of equality and harm avoidance than men. They want to impress the girl, and so therefore, and they're under a great deal of stress anyway. They're high in neuroticism and whatever. They're under stress. And it's those two things together which make them, which draw them in and which force them via a religious experience to convince themselves of the veracity of that new religion and to fundamentally change who they are and to change their sense of self. It's via secondary conversion. This is happening in Brazil at the moment. There is a massive wave of new religiosity, of Pentecostalism sweeping Brazil. And hugely, it's via secondary conversion. The women convert and then their husbands or their boyfriends or whatever convert. Or their boyfriends convert as part of getting them and impressing them and so forth. And remember, the people, reasonably intelligent people, are able to convince themselves of the veracity of something if it's in their interests to do so. So if it's in the interest of getting a nice girl, then they'll do so. Now, I think this is what happened with Prince Harry. This notion of what we call flirty fishing, as I say, it goes right back to the early church. The Fabianites were, the children of God would literally have sex with potential converts in order to try to convert them. The Fabianites, this is again a Gnostic idea. The world is separated from God by 365 degrees of heaven. We are bits of light trapped in the darkness. The seed of light is passed on via semen or menses. Every time you ingest the seed as part of an orgy, then you move one heaven further to God. And again, it could have been exaggerated by their opponents, but basically they'd have these orgies in which they'd mix together semen and menses and then eat it as a Eucharist, as the body of Christ, and then have an orgy where they'd have sex and then they'd move one step closer to God. Anyway, they would engage in what's called flirty fishing. They'd send women out, sexy young women who were their converts, to try and convert the men. Secondary conversion. And I think there's there's been research that has actually looked at the way in which you do have something like conversion experience in wokeness. It is that close to Christianity. You do have conversion. There was a book I wrote many years ago, one of my least read book, called Shock and Multiculturalism, in which I looked at the religious dimensions to really proto-wokeness, essentially. That was published in 2012. And one paper I cite there is by a Finnish researcher called Katri Jokikoko, 2009, The Role of Significant Others in the Introduction of... Oh God, what have I written here? In intercultural learning of teachers. And what you have basically is testimonies by education students, Finnish education students, who say, I was naive, I was racist, I was a Finnish nationalist, I had prejudices against foreigners. I met someone who didn't. I met someone who was Finnish and who understood the importance of multiculturalism, who understood the importance of intercultural communication, who understood the importance of knowing your prejudices. And then I had a sense of realization, a sense of gnosis, if you like, a sense of epiphany, a sense of knowing that I was wrong and that interculturality is really important. And now I'm multiculturalist. And so what you're dealing with there is the framework of a religious conversion going on in Finland 10, 15 years ago among young women. A fundamental change in identity from being what was the norm in this country 15 or 20 years ago, in Finland 15 or 20 years ago, which is that you're nationalistic and you're Finnish and you're racist. The first cat I ever met in Finland was called, you know, the N-word. To the change to now, where you have a new morality, a new religion of multiculturalism, and they talk about some kind of conversion, and it has the dynamics of conversion. And it has then this, what you have is a new self. The old self is destroyed, and the new self rises from it. Now, that new self is unstable. The neuroticism goes away briefly. A person who has a conversion experience, a real conversion experience, will have a sense of euphoria and whatever that will go on for a while. But it will go away. And so they have to constantly reassure themselves that they're right. They do this in a number of ways. They do this by highlighting people that are the thing they used to be and persecuting them and being nasty to them and trying to destroy them, because that reassures them that they genuinely do believe these things and they genuinely are morally superior and therefore they genuinely are good, and therefore it assuages their negative thoughts about themselves and overwhelm them. And the second thing you can do is what Simon Coleman, the anthropologist of religion, has called continuous conversion. So you try to induce the experience anew via various techniques that get you in the zone and get you feeling it. You go to religious rituals and whatever, you do these rituals and they induce that feeling again, that feeling of communitas, of sameness, of oneness, of certainty, of moral superiority, of all this stuff that you originally experienced in your epiphany when you were told that you knew the essential truth. And I think you can argue that's what you have with Harry. Now, a related issue, which I think I want to look at in another video, which I shall research, is the idea of women as cult leaders. This is something people have talked about with Meghan Markle, the idea of a female cult leader, a female charismatic figure, and how they operate with regard to friendship groups and more generally. I think I'll look at that later. But anyway, the point is that I think, yes, it is. Why do people fundamentally change? I knew people at school like this that fundamentally changed. The answer is normally that they are neurotic, which they hide, and they might hide quite well. And they deal with this ultimately by having some sort of religious experience. And the religious experience results, basically borderline personality, in a new self developing. And what we have with Harry is someone who is permanently stuck at the age of 12. And that also fits with wokeness, because we know that wokeness itself is associated, just like extreme forms of religiosity, is associated with high neuroticism. our wokeness is an expression, essentially, of what I've looked at in detail before, high neuroticism, and therefore Machiavellianism and narcissism as coping mechanisms for high neuroticism. It's associated with high neuroticism. So of course it's going to be attractive to someone like that. But he has gone from one extreme, which is the kind of suppressing of the neuroticism via a persona of toughness, to another extreme, which is the wallowing in the neuroticism via the persona of wokeness. But it is all a persona. There is no real self. There is no real sense of meaning. It is all shallow.
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke, joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you could also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!